Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Well, it's time now for our weekly gathering. We're going to take a look at the stories making the news this week, and I'm joined by Rose Conway-Walsh, Sinn Féin TD for Mayo and party spokesperson on further and higher education. Jennifer Carroll McNeill, Fine Gael TD for Dunleary and party spokesperson for equality is here, along with Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland editor with the Irish Independent. Just two things that emerged over the course of the morning, Fionnán. We had Portobello Plaza in Dublin, 1,000 people gathering there over the course of the weekend. Owen Keegan was on from Dublin City Council saying he's shutting it down this weekend. And then the other COVID impact, which we just heard about, was the National Ploughing Championships, the exhibition and the international competition gone. And Anna-Marie McHugh really disappointed and upset, really, that she's had to make this decision, but also saying that she just wasn't getting any information from government on it. What do you think of those two things?
Well, I think fair play to Dublin City Council. I see it myself, and I think lots of other people see it. At weekends, you go down to the park on a Saturday or Sunday morning, the place is just littered with bottles. I keep getting told that this is the most the upcoming generation is the most environmentally conscious we've ever seen in the history of humanity, except when it comes to drinking on a Saturday night.
But you're an awful codger. Well, like, I mean, are we not told that we're to go outside and be outdoors? And if
grand,
we can't manage it in May, how are we going to manage it in July?
We're not told to litter places and smash bottles and leave rubbish all over the place. So, there, you know, ultimately, there's personal responsibility kicks in here, and if people can't be trusted, well, then a local authority has to take action. You'd have great sympathy for the ploughing, but it is rather a common sense decision. I still can't see a position where you can put 80,000 people into a space September, and the notion that the ploughing is all outdoors and therefore that's all grand, not quite. I mean, all of the marquees in the exhibition area,
I think they understand that, according to what Anna-Marie was saying. It's just that they didn't get any guidance, you know, that they didn't get any support. And she said that the Minister for Agriculture called her and said, we'll have something for you in a few weeks, and they just couldn't wait, Jennifer, for that, and they had to just go on their own and make that call.
They are the difficult decisions that have to be made. The government can't make promises or predictions about September. You know, we're trying to analyse the effect of the vaccination programme in May to make decisions for June and July. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it we just can't go further ahead than that. We don't know where we'll be. We hope we'll be in a good place, but we can't make those decisions yet.
Going back to what happened in Dublin and Dublin City Council's decision to pull Portobello Plaza and cut off access to it, it doesn't bode well for an outdoor summer if we can't manage these types of situations. Surely it's up to the councils to put in place the toilet facilities, the litter facilities, the policing of these areas as well, in conjunction with the Gardaí, to make sure that people can be outside and enjoy themselves.
And I think a lot of them are trying to do that. In my own area, we've had a whole new suite of bins around the place. We're putting in public toilets down around the 40 foot, and that recognising that people are moving picnics outside and being outside more. But, you know, you do have to bring your rubbish home. I mean, you know, we do that on a day-to-day basis. What's different about sitting out in a park on a Friday night than on a Friday morning? Bring your rubbish home.
Yeah, what do you think it says about our outdoor summer, Rose?
Well, I think people need clear messaging, and obviously people haven't had that, but I think there's things that need to be put in place. Now, the local authorities, this was in Mayo County Council, I know there, I talk to them on a daily basis, and they're putting everything possible in place to allow for outdoors, because that's what's recommended. So the support, the services have to be there, and the clear messages have to be there. But we should be able to predict people's behaviour as well at this time. You know, if people are allowed to go outside, they will go outside, and then there's services that need to be put in place for that. So I think it can be, you know, it can be solved, I think, and we have to remember that people
without
have been
closing the spaces down.
Yeah, and people have been locked up now for more than a year, you know, for most of the year, and really people deserve a break. People need a break as well at this time, and the least we can do is provide those services for them.
But maybe in a more disparate way, like, I think where the councils are doing good work at the moment is supporting restaurants to be able to provide outdoor spaces. You know, there's money behind that. There's good policy behind that. That just needs to be done as quickly as possible to enable, you know, people being outside, but more dispersed. And I mean, look, I don't know what the balance of Owen Keegan's decision was, but if you're putting out the toilets, as you should be, because that's just a basic human need, putting out the bins, you know, the councils have been given the money and the wherewithal to do these things. They do need to get on with it. But if you have a continual littering and congregation problem, I can see where he's making his decision.
He described how the residents have been feeling, kind of how you feel as well, Fionnán, dealing with all the problems that come with that. Let's move on to housing, because that's an issue that has dominated the news for another week now. The government appears to be scrambling to solve this issue of institutional investors buying up these houses. The example, of course, is the one in Kildare. It seems extraordinary, Jennifer, that this problem was allowed to mushroom over, we're into the third term of Fine Gael in government now.
That's true, and the problem has been there all along, from when we started out dealing with ghost estates and calls to knock those down, and we've gone through a cycle of recovering the economy and trying to get house building going again. The government has 3.3 billion it's spending this year, up from 900 million in 2016. So the money is there and the state building programme is going ahead. One of the issues that we've had in trying to address the family homeless issue is that the state, as well as other, have been trying to buy turnkey houses that are built to try to help with the social housing problem, and that is part of a factor, that is part of it, you know, and all of those things are dealt with by supply. We don't want to see institutional investors buying up large estates, but we're going to have to get to potentially a calculation where we ask, is it right for the state to be doing that as well, in competition with people who are trying to buy a home for themselves, and, you know, private home for themselves, or somebody who's trying to downsize or change.
These are shaking your head as you're speaking there.
You know, I just think that people would have some respect for government if at this stage they said that they held their hands up and they owned the problem. Because since 2013 and since the REITs and foreign investors were brought in and enticed to come in and given taxpayers money through tax incentives, paying no capital gains tax, and the dividends withholding tax, and also not paying stamp duty or paying very little stamp duty. All of those things have caused this to happen. So it hasn't happened by accident. And now we're in a situation where people cannot afford houses. And still government are on the same pathway of saying, well, we need these. Like Michael Noonan said, you know, we need them to come in. Instead of saying at this stage, we have failed.
We have failed the citizens. Why did we need them in 2012 and 2013? Why was that decision made?
To attract investors. Why was it made?
It was made because construction finance changed entirely from being entirely bank debt. Your Anglos and others ploughing 110% into developers. That's how construction was financed. All of that changed after the crash. And there's a totally different structure. You have to have equity, you have to have senior debt, and institutional funds have come in to try to contribute towards that.
That has contributed
to supply of housing.
And that is important, and we have to protect it. Not being able to afford a home, that's the problem. It's not about delivering supply. You really need to look at supply. So you're saying that government policy was absolutely right. I'm saying that it's right that government had the right policy all along by attracting investors. You know what happened. You know the small builders, the medium builders here, the houses were taken from them. The banks crucified them. They came down on them like
a ton of bricks.
We're
going a whole load of different tracks here.
No, we're not.
There was the right decision to bring in institutional investment at
a
time when there was...
how long do you think it should have been left?
Can I finish my sentence, Rose? At a time when there was no other way of financing construction, that was the right decision to bring in institutional investment to do that. We don't want to get to a point where institutional investment is buying finished product, but we do need institutional investment to help finance building. That contributes towards supply.
So you're going to continue on the same way. Fionnán Sheehan,
you know, when you look at what's happening now, the vaccination rollout is coming to the point where we can probably see in a couple of months' time when the last vaccine will be going into the last arm in this country. This problem, the housing problem, this is going to completely take over and swamp this government, would you say?
It hasn't gone away, you know, to paraphrase a former leader of Roses. The difficulty here is, if anything, the pandemic has parked and paused the issue, but at the same time, it's actually exacerbated it. Suddenly, people are seeing more and more that as our world shrunk, our eyes were opened. And that architecture, planning, open space, communities, a place to call home became increasingly important during that time period. At the same time, it has contracted the supply as a result of the restrictions. What we're learning politically now is beware of people with very simple solutions, because the current housing minister was odd, click the fingers and I'll sort that out, no problem, and here's an old bill off the shelf that I'll just rattle off in a photocopier and away we go. And he's now in office and he's finding it is very difficult to tackle these issues. Give you one concrete example, swung by a site in Dublin that is now pretty much infamous at this point. 5 minutes from Houston Station, 5 minutes from the Phoenix Park, 10 minutes from the city centre, Lewis and bus facilities all around in O'Devany Gardens. Still a wasteland. Now, there is agreement on what to put there, but that has taken 15 years to get to this point. So that there is nothing simple there. I think we're going to hit a point during this decade where this issue becomes the repeal or same-sex marriage of the 2020s, and we're going to ultimately have to go down the constitutional referendum issue, at least examine it.
Mm-hmm. And that asking what?
Well, asking, for example, can we restrict property rights under the constitution of individuals who own property? So, for example, to make it more difficult for people to object to planning applications in their area, to also, in this scenario that we're looking at, make it more prescriptive for local authorities to be able to determine the breakdown and who exactly can purchase properties in this area. There's a great difficulty here. If you start turning around to property developers and saying, well, you can't sell it to that investment fund over there, but you can sell it to this 100 people over here, then immediately head down to High Court mm-hmm. and say, hang on, I own the land, I developed the properties, I own them, and you're now telling me who I can and can't, and on what price I can sell them at. So there's obviously a better yield if you're selling to a conglomerate who are buying all 100 of your units. You immediately get economies of scale and makes it an awful lot simpler to deal with one client rather than 100. So those difficulties are going to arise in this case. You can turn around and say, for the greater good, you can override certain constitutional provisions, but that'll only last until somebody ends up down the courts bringing a successful challenge.
And that has been one of the difficulties. You can use public land. You can use public land to build public housing and affordable housing, and this hasn't been done to date. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there needs to be a change of direction. Ona Brin, our own housing spokesperson, has shown how you can build 20,000 public homes in 1 year, how you can meet the demand that's there and how they can be affordable. And the model of, you know, using approved housing bodies and community housing trusts and local authorities to build these homes, I think, is very feasible. It's something that needs to be done. We can't use housing as a commodity.
Jennifer Brea in the Irish Times runs through your housing policy. You mentioned Owen O'Brien there, and his policy is that you would buy your home for 230,000, say, in Dublin. That would be the rate of you would buy your affordable home, but it will be leasehold, not freehold. So you'll own the property, but you won't own the land. And for some people, that is a problem because you won't have a full say over what you do with that property when you want to pass it on in terms of selling it.
Yeah, Claire, I don't think that's an issue because I haven't lived in London for a long time, even if it was always leaseholds or freeholds. So you have a 99-year lease or a 120-year leasehold like that. People would have a home.
People are getting a house in Dublin for 230,000. Jennifer, they would be happy to have that on a leasehold basis. Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. No, I think people up and down the state have been used to buying, having the option of buying a private house on private land and having the ability
but
to dispose.
They don't have that option now.
Could I dispose of it and to deal with it in whatever way you like over time? I mean, Fiona is right about the constitutional restrictions. That has been a barrier all the way through this in terms of government policy, the protection of private property. It has made things much more difficult, but people are attached to private property here, whether it's what you do with your house or what you do with your car. That is the way in which we have managed our society for a very long time. But the institutional thing has to be put in context. Less than 1% of properties in the state are owned by institutional funds. Less than 4% of tenancies are by institutional funds. But you know, Rose would have you believe it's everything everywhere, and it isn't at all.
Well, we
need 33,000 houses built next year.
We do.
The state we need 18,000 of those to be built by private entities, private companies, private developers, and financed in that way as well. That is how we're going to deliver that.
It's government responsibility to deliver that. And where you have ordinary households and couples, hardworking couples competing with investor funds who get huge tax breaks, that just cannot be allowed.
They're also
to happen.
Competing though with housing bodies and with county councils as well.
They are, but if you're providing housing in that way, then you're taking some of those people out of the market as well.
Your philosophy is to, that is what the state has been doing. It has been delivering social housing to, for people. Even last year during the pandemic, there was still 6,000 new social houses.
6,000, how many were needed?
The balance is the competition between and making other housing available for first-time buyers and people trying to buy in a distant market.
Can we just move on, because you touched on planning there, and I want to bring up this Antashka story where the Taoiseach said during the week about this cheese factory in Kilkenny. I mean, really, it's just extraordinary what's developed from this. But he said he would hope that Antashka wouldn't carry on in their objections. The High Court has decided that it should go ahead, but they do have the right to appeal that should they so wish, Fionn Onn. But what is this argument really about when you look at it in the political context?
Well, I don't know when Antashka shifted from being an organisation that protected, you know, wildlife and scenery and so on, into one that suddenly became a watchdog on national climate change policy. I'm unaware when that mission creep actually kicked in. So I'm not entirely clear where they're going here. So on the one hand, it's none of their business really, but on the flip side, they are raising an interesting point here, which is basically...
Why is it none of their business?
Well, because they're not saying that there's actually wrong with this this development architecturally. They're not saying it's the impingement upon the local environment is the issue. They're actually saying it's at odds with national environmental policy in terms of the output of emissions. And therein is where there is an interesting point, in that nobody is explaining, particularly to the agriculture sector and the farming community, when we say we are going to have the most ambitious climate change reduction targets, emissions reduction targets in the whole of Europe, what that actually is going to mean on the ground. Because farmers ended up in a situation, particularly in the dairy sector 5 years ago, where quotas were being dropped. They therefore invested heavily, not just in livestock, but also facilities, infrastructure, milking parlours, sheds, etc. They're now being told by individual creameries, well, actually, we don't want you producing as heavily during the peak period. So they're actually looking at a position where the output that they could be providing, they're now being told there is no market for it. So in effect, quotas are coming back into place. So until somebody is honest enough to turn around to farmers and say, this is our plan for the national herd, yep, this is the reduction that we feel should be achieved from the agriculture sector, that is going to continue to be a problem.
Okay, Rose?
Yeah, I think the problem is that you have one government and you have two policies and they're not matching up. So you don't have a joined up thinking there. So
But governments agreed as a whole to the Climate Action Bill. It's just interesting to see senior politicians coming out and saying what they did about this situation. I just don't know where it will take us down the line when we're trying to achieve 7% reduction in emissions.
And I think that's part of the problem. So even if we look in terms of the Agri-Food Strategy 2030 that's chaired by Tom Arnold, we'll see the consultation period for that is closing on the 5th of June. But on one hand, you have the Green Party in the coalition government and they're proposing an agri-food strategy, while at the same time their bedfellows, the environmental pillar, have pulled out from those talks. So I suppose it shows the instability and the chaos within government in this issue.
Is that fair, Jennifer? Is that true?
No, it's not.
Well, if you heard Nasa Harrigan on this programme yesterday, you would absolutely agree with that. I mean, she's talking about going back to the days of the Galway tent.
The whole government and everybody supporting the government is behind the Climate Action Bill. In relation to the Antashka decision to appeal the High Court judgment, I mean, I think the simplest thing is to go back and actually look at what the High Court said. It looked and said, you know, Antashka is an important independent body and they play a great role, but they challenged this with On Board Planola and they challenged it then in the High Court, and the High Court decision just eviscerates what they did without any scientific evidence. You know, it is a really damning decision. And the question is it appropriate, looking at that decision, to continue with the objection? What the High Court decision says is this.
You would only be entitled to say that to Antashka if you were their legal advisor. They are absolutely entitled to do what they want after with that decision afterwards.
They are absolutely entitled to it.
So why are you and your colleagues in Fine Gael saying to them, you happen to hope, look at the judgment.
Certainly not saying that.
You are saying that. You're saying,
have you read the judgment, Claire? Have you read it?
I have not read the judgment.
It is unusual.
But I absolutely know that Antashka have a right to do with that judgment what they want.
We're not in disagreement with that.
I'm sorry, you just said...
Excuse me, Claire, we're not in
disagreement. You just said the judgment eviscerated them. No, hang on a second.
The judgment does eviscerate it.
Hang on a second.
It goes back to them, it says...
I have had John Paul Phelan and you on here saying that Antashka should not exercise their right to appeal that judgment.
If the judgment says that this is a question not of technicality or legality, this is a question of government policy. The judgment goes through it and says, look, the real difficulty that Antashka seem to have here is not with the process, although they have raised the process. Their difficulty is with the with government policy and how government policy is reducing emissions or not reducing emissions. That is the text of the judgment from the High Court. Now, let's go and talk about government policy as a consequence of that. Fine, absolutely. But that's what the judgment says. And government policy is about two things. It is about reducing emissions and it is about supporting our rural economy and supporting farmers who are on the front line of climate change, who are making major changes to how they do their business to try to affect the sorts of emissions.
Yeah,
we have
an
important agricultural...
I just think it's extraordinary that politicians are commenting on this situation in the way that they are. I just find it extraordinary.
And meanwhile, the courts are left to sort out the government mess. You know, that's the problem.
All right, but they're ignoring the fact that they're not actually being upfront, and pretty much you can drag in opposition parties here as well. Let's leave out some of the rural independents. There's a lack of honesty here in terms of what is the sustainable policy for the agriculture sector for the next 30 years, because a large number of dairy farmers have now racked up a large debt over the past 5 years. They're now left with that debt to having to pay it off, and they are uncertain what's coming down the track.
So you're saying that they need clarity on how this 7% per annum will be achieved?
Yeah, well, that's what we don't have to date. If we're going to turn around and say, well, right, we're going to achieve this by making everybody who drives a petrol and diesel car have to ditch it within 2 years and switch to electric, then so be it. But set it out, because farmers don't have that clarity at the moment, and they're the ones whose livelihoods are going to be affected by these decisions.
I mean, the other point about all of this is that we have politicians commenting on this who have shares in Glanbia. Is that appropriate, Jennifer?
There's politicians. Yeah, John Paul Phelan has shares in Glanbia, which he has declared in the normal way. But it's not just John Paul Phelan. There's a whole range of different politicians commenting on it because they're concerned about the rural economy, because they're concerned about farmers being able to have somewhere to have a livelihood. This is this project is an important investment decision for that part of the country. It's important that farmers, and a lot of them are small farmers who are producing in a different way, that they have somewhere to bring that. And that's a broader political concern. I think it's fair in politics if you have shares, you've declared them in the appropriate way under SIPO. It's completely transparent, but it's by no means just John Paul Phelan. I mean, like, I'm in Dunleary, there are very few farms there, and I have a concern about the rural economy and supporting the rural economy. I also have a concern about affecting climate change, and I'm looking around the people in my constituency who are making changes and trying to make changes, and they're looking at their cars and they're going, I wonder when I can afford to change this towards an electric car, and everybody is trying to make those changes, but it's the whole country doing it together. And it'd be very easy to sit in Dublin and go, you know, you guys should do something else, when actually it's everybody's responsibility.
Okay.
Claire, you would rule out every TD who owns a property from having any opinion upon the housing market if that policy was to be adopted.
It's very specific, though, to be supporting a particular company when that company is involved in a planning dispute.
What about TDs who have rental properties who are coming in commenting upon rent freezes? It's the same principle. Mm-hmm. Jackie Cal has a farm outside Turles. He's former president of the ICMSA. Of course he's going to have shares as a farmer in a creamery. What was a creamery operating in his area? His expertise in the area, so therefore he should be allowed to comment. It's quite clear where he stands because he has put that on the record of that he has shares in his company.
Yeah, I just think it's we're entering into a different place if we're advising people publicly. People with power are advising people and entities not to pursue something, you know? I would hope that you would drop this. That's a dangerous place for us to be going when it comes to planning.
But it is when it's they actually have, it is a statutory body. So if they don't want them pursuing going down this route, they can remove their role as a statutory body and say, we don't want you there anymore.
All right, let's talk about something else briefly. Oh, we only have about a minute left. But the Taoiseach has said there should be no restrictions in maternity hospitals that ban partners from attending scans and being present at births and so on. It's hard to understand what the message has to be to get those restrictions lifted. We know that, isn't it 14 of the 19 now have no restrictions, but they still remain in five, Jennifer. Can you understand the position on this?
Yeah, and I think the reason is because those five hospitals are co-located with a different hospital, don't have different entrances and so on. But look, it's incredibly difficult for women. I was speaking with the Master of Holles Street this morning just to check in how are things there. You know, they've had free visits essentially or an open visits in the neonatal intensive care unit since last June. That's one of the longest, loneliest shifts in a hospital. You know, people have been there for full labour since August. But, you know, they have the advantage, the relative advantage of being a distinct entity.
Yeah. Rose, quick word.
I mean, I think the vast majority of maternity staff are now vaccinated. Pregnant women are on the list for prioritisation. Mm. I would really hope that in the coming days, decisions would be made around this because, as the WHO said, no woman should be forced to give birth alone.
Absolutely. I think that was a cue for us to finish up. Thank you very much indeed, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, Rose Conway-Walsh and Fiona Sheehan. And that's all we have time for today and this week. Thank you for listening. Today's programme was produced by Rachel Graham, research by Niamh Lyons. Broadcast coordinator was Geraldine Collins. On sound was Tommy O'Sullivan. The series producer is Alistair McConnell. Have a lovely weekend. Now it's over to Michael Cahill.